How do you get a column in the Forbes?
I had to sleep with like a million people.
Who's the best one to start sleeping with?
Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey, listener, if you've ever thought about publishing a book or running a membership site, then this episode is for you. Two interesting topics from one very interesting person. Elissa Doucette, come on down. Can you give a little background on yourself? Because unlike a lot of the people I bring on, you've done some very different things. So I want to make sure that people understand your career path.
I majored in university in creative writing and classical studies, and then got an extremely illustrious job in an insurance sales office, where I quickly learned that instead of being a receptionist licking envelopes, I would much rather make my money doing sales, because apparently that's how you make money in a sales office. And I even more quickly learned to sell life insurance. Then a few years was one of the top life insurance salespeople in the state of Maine. Ended up getting promoted to the field management office for this particular insurance company, managed all of the life insurance sales in the state, including making sure people hit their sales goals, had the correct, you know, training and marketing and that sort of thing. And also did a lot of tech training and basically managing 60 sales offices and almost 400 sales agents. Around 2008, I got the brilliant idea, for reasons that escape me still to this day, that I should start blogging. I think in large part it was just because I missed writing. So I started blogging for basically my parents and their cat. As I blogged more and kind of ended up getting on more sites, getting guest posts, getting articles posted, getting syndication, all the while working a 70-hour-a-week sales job, I built up kind of this freelancing platform of writing and content. And in 2010, ended up leaving the insurance management office to go into freelancing full-time. At that point in time, basically started building out my entire freelancing business on a more full-time basis. So taking on client work, taking on article work, doing that sort of thing. Had a bad bout, decided that I was writing the wrong kind of content, didn't like it, wanted to write new content, but didn't really find a way to make up the income from the old content, which is not always a good idea. You should continue doing things that you get paid for if you own a business. So I went back into sales consulting and marketing consulting for about 6 months to kind of rebuild my depleted savings account. Went back to insurance agencies and internet marketing firms and that sort of thing, and kind of like rented myself out a day or two a week for about $1,000 each to let me come into their office and help them build their sales and marketing plan and do training with their teams and that sort of thing. About just after I kind of got my groove back, I randomly was writing an article for my column on Forbes about location independent entrepreneurship. And my friend Sean Ogle from Location 180 messaged me and told me after I'd interviewed him that I should get in touch with this guy named Dan Andrews from Tropical MBA. So from Tropical MBA, did the interview with Dan. It was supposed to be like a 20-minute interview. Ended up being like a 2.5-hour just conversation about business and location independence and travel and life and everything else. I really ended up kind of respecting the business and everything that he did, joined his membership community. And 3 weeks later, when he posted a job looking for someone to help him build the membership community and build his content platform by basically getting in there and writing a bunch of posts so that they could kind of throw content at the wall and see what happened, I instead pitched them what a managing editor does for a publishing company and explained that, you know, they needed to focus on being the mastheads and being the editors in chief. And what they needed to do was hire someone to be a managing editor that would run the day-to-day operations, that would execute the strategies, that would oversee the entire thing and run the community. They hired me. I moved to Bali. I worked for them for 3 years. While building up my own business, both the writing studio and my editorial content company now. And that brought me to this day.
Wow. Well, the first thing that I know a lot of people will want to know, how do you get a column in the Forbes?
I had to sleep with like a million people.
Who's the best one to start sleeping with?
Well, at that point in time, I was working 70 hours a week and writing like 20 to 30. So the only thing I was sleeping with was my teddy bear. But basically, my column on Forbes was a real happenstance of networking with some good people. I had gotten my blog syndicated on the site Brazen Careerist, meaning that they basically picked up my RSS feed and they were trying to build their own content platform. And so they were putting out a ton of content. I was one of the people that uploaded my feed to be syndicated. And then very quickly, they started featuring a lot of the posts I was writing. They started asking me to write articles specifically for them. And I started really networking with a lot of the other writers and syndicated folks on Brazen Careerist. And we like built this weird little community dynamic wherein we all just kind of worked really hard and tried to help each other. And that really like established the foundation for me of interacting with people online, setting myself the precedent that when someone tweets me, I reply to them. When someone emails me, I send them a message within 2 to 3 days. And that's extremely late replies for me. Just really making sure that I was aware of and respected other people's consideration for me. And come January of 2010, I had just come off of being featured as one of Brazen Careerist's top articles of 2009. It was a post called "Why Are Young Professionals Commitment Phobic?" And first, I got followed on Twitter by this woman, and her Twitter bio said that she was an editor at Forbes. And she @replied me, and one, because I had kind of set this system and precedent that when people talked to me, I talked back to them. And two, you know, I'm not a complete idiot. I definitely saw she was an editor at Forbes in her bio when I clicked on her. I responded back and I went back and forth with her a couple times about some article I had written or something I had done. And about 2 weeks later, I got an email from someone. It ended up being this woman, although I didn't kind of put the two things together at the time. And this email said, "Forbes is creating this contributors platform. We would really love for you to come onto the Forbes Women channel to write about the exact stuff that you write about, this kind of modern feminist view wherein, you know, women definitely still are struggling and still do have a lot of work that they have to do. But it's not quite as caught up in the activism and more so being a strategic viewpoint, especially for young professionals." Things like your article that was featured on Brazen Careerist about young professionals being commitment phobic. And so I wrote back to her in the extremely intelligent way that anyone should use to build their career and essentially said, "Are you real?" So I was kind of expecting the next email would be something like, "Now to get you started, all we're going to need is your routing number, your bank account, your social security number. Just wire it to this Nigerian account. The prince will send you some money." And she wrote back and verified that she was real. And I kind of went back and forth with her about what I wanted the content of my posts and article and column to be. Ended up landing on Shattering Glass, which is my current column on there, about breaking through the perceived notions and limitations that we set for ourselves, focusing on women, but really trying to write to a broad audience as well. Yeah, so starting on February 10th or 11th of 2010, I signed my contributor contract and was off and running. My first post had something like 15,000 views the first day off of an article that I wrote about a war correspondent.
Nice. You actually read some of your articles and they're good. I was just wondering myself how you got that job. And it seems like it's a long path. I think a lot of people thought that, yeah, all you need to do is just find someone, wire some money, maybe sleep with someone and get on the Forbes column.
I frequently get asked this question of how did you do it? And I've kind of defaulted to that as the immediate reaction because it was a long path. It definitely, I don't know if I'm not as crafty and smart enough as some of these other people who've been able to make these kind of things happen in, you know, 2 to 3 months or whatever. But my writing career and getting there was a good like 2 to 3 year process.
I think it's just like with anything else. A lot of people look for these magic bullets and the hype. I just did an episode on health and fitness and it's the same thing. We're just trying to explain that the realistic approach will take a lot of time, a lot of consistency. You need to have these things in place like yourself. You have to answer people. You have to message them back. There's things you just need to do to set up in your life to make that maybe possible. It doesn't happen overnight.
I am a proponent of inbox zero, not because I like to feel some sense of fulfillment or because I'm a type A driven, ambitious, crazy, annoying person, which I am both of those things, don't get me wrong. But for me, inbox zero means that I've responded to people, and it's not always necessarily, you know, my inbox is my space. So people who come into my space and are trying to ask me for things that I don't necessarily have the desire or the capability of fulfilling, or people who want to harass me, or people who want to kind of continue, you know, nitpicking at me and all that kind of stuff, I don't have a tolerance for it. And I'll respond very kindly and say, you know, thank you very much for your email. Here are some great resources I've found. Best of luck. So that at least I talk to them, and at least I've made the effort to make sure that they matter as people, because shockingly, they do matter as people, but not in a way that they get to dictate the course of my day.
I think that's a really good tip. The next thing I want to go into, because you've been writing for quite some time now, and I think the popular notion is that we all have at least one book in us. But the thing is, how do we get that book out? What would you recommend?
I have approximately 17 books that are like in notes in various different Scrivener and Evernote folders and different things like that. And I think that that's that way with a lot of people. A lot of people kind of come up with things that they think would be a really good book and maybe do a little bit of work on them. But the thing with writing books that, you know, a lot of people don't realize, if you want to write a book that's going to kind of, you're happy to put your name on, it's going to establish some sort of authority for you, either in your business or as a writer or as a thinker, it's going to take some time and it's going to take a lot of work. I just worked with a client on an ebook that he wrote in literally 3 days. He was so proud and so excited for it. And I really admire a lot of the things that he's done with his business. So I kind of, as a friend of mine, I kind of emailed him on the sly and said, hey, do you want to send that over to my editorial team to take a look at? You know, be more than happy to give it a once over for you just to see. And by the time, you know, by the time I got it, he sent it to me with an email basically saying like, oh my God, now that I'm actually sending this to an actual editorial agency to look over and review, I realize like how shit it is and how much work is actually going to be needed for me to put my name on it. And that was a conversation we had in February. And I just signed off on the final edit proof like mid-August.
But let's even get more into the basics. A lot of people, they have this idea maybe in their head, like I have this book in me, but they never start writing. Can you give some tips on how to actually make sure that you write every day, some fail-safe routines?
It's tough because it's different for different people. And, you know, some people are going to, I always hate giving this kind of advice because I read so many places, write 1,000 words every morning as soon as you get up without fail. Well, for me, anything that I write in the morning is pure shit. Like, I am not a creative person first thing in the morning, even after I have been blessed with coffee. So that advice doesn't work for me to create any sort of content. My writing time, and I know this because I've split tested the amounts that I put out and basically like the reception of the writing that I share written at different times, you know, my creative time is from 2 to 5 p.m. So I make sure to earmark and, you know, make that time precious to me. I don't take calls. I don't get on email. My cold turkey website blocking program is on like super nuclear lockdown from noon to five. I do everything I can to kind of remove distractions. I write frequently with my headphones in. I have an instrumental writing playlist that I use on Spotify. I don't like listening to songs with words because it kind of distracts me while I'm trying to write words. But I do have an instrumental list that I listen to. I kind of do anything that I can to zone out the rest of the world and zone in on what I'm trying to work on for that particular writing session. And then I just sit down and do it. It's one of the worst, most annoying pieces of writing advice, and I totally get it. But the way to get better about a routine of writing is to get into a routine of writing.
Yeah, after hanging out with you, I kind of thought you have a really good way of zoning out the world. Now I see where that came from. This has been practiced. This is not something that just happened overnight.
It's a lifetime of work on that one, actually. It comes from a lot of time as a child reading a lot of books on like the playground and lunchroom and not really hanging out with a lot of people. So I don't necessarily think that it's, you know, the healthiest thing to do all the time. but it definitely works really well for...
I think that's really good advice. So split testing the times that you should be writing, listen to instrumentals, and have an app to just block every... What app are you using to black out all the websites?
I'm a PC girl. I'm one of a dying breed in the marketing and location independent worlds, but I love my PC. I adamantly will go down swinging for anyone who tries to tell me I suck. And I use Cold Turkey.
Really? So that's the actual name of it. Okay. I thought there's something else and you just named it that, Cold Turkey.
Yeah, no, it's the program is actually called Cold Turkey. It actually, I think it's like Freedom for Mac. I've tried using the Chrome extensions and that sort of thing, but I basically learned how to hack Chrome to be able to get around them and be able to get onto like Facebook, which was a sad state of my Facebook addiction high. Once you've hacked Chrome to be able to get into Facebook to like look at an update, you realize, you know, you're essentially a junkie at that point.
Yeah, you have a problem.
Cold Turkey is actually an executable file that you download onto your PC. The only way to unblock it or to turn it off is to literally go into your root files and disable the program and then uninstall it.
That's awesome. That is a lot of work. All right, let's get into this membership site that you are pretty much running from what I remember. Can you give any advice on running something like that? Because it's been, 800 people in that thing, I think.
It's tough. I ran the operations and kind of day-to-day of the forums for a while. I was extremely lucky to work with someone who actually had a pretty good business setup and pretty good vision for what he wanted the forums and the website to be. So I was kind of the hatchet man. Just made sure that stuff ran and stuff went the way that he wanted it to go. Obviously, with much of my own insight and input, I obviously provided my own insight and input into running the website as well, probably much to his chagrin and definitely evidenced by anyone who is on some of our numerous Skype calls with some heated vocabularies between the two of us. But the kind of main things that I always tried to focus on in the membership community were just making sure that it was a place that people would want to go to. So making sure that there were really compelling and interesting discussions going on and really great content for people to use. Doing everything that we could to facilitate relationships between the members. So hosting events and encouraging people to host events and trying to set up meetups kind of globally because it's an internet forum. It's a global network. Doing anything that we could to kind of make sure that our members viewed the website not only as library of content and resources and discussions, but also a place that they could go to where they could find people who could help them with things or people who had similar interests to them or people who were in the same boat as them or, you know, sometimes quite literally. And really making sure that we did everything we could to make it easy for people to be able to make those connections. And then also kind of recognizing being the person on the back end who had 3 years of knowledge with the forums and knew how all of the software worked and knew things that we had tried that we knew didn't work with our particular audience. So that the famous Henry Ford quote that if he had asked people what they wanted, they would have told him that they wanted a faster horse.
Oh, I agree. I've actually thought about that one before. And there's been research where people have been asked, do you want to have a phone that you walk with every day? And they said, no, we have a phone at the house. Do you want to have a website where you share your information? Of course not, but that's Facebook.
Yeah. Or they don't understand and they don't need to. It's definitely not their role, but they don't necessarily always understand. The thing with a membership site is you've got 800 people in there who want the site to be exactly what they want it to be. So you have to kind of balance the wants and needs of 800 people with what's best for the community and what's best for your vision going forward, what's best for what you want your community and your site to be, because otherwise the inmates start running the insane asylum.
That's true. But one of the keys that I've learned from this actual forum, which I haven't seen in a lot of other ones, is that instead of trying to teach people something, this has been much more about building a community. And I think that's probably the reason why people stay much longer than they would if they just learned something and walked off.
Yeah, that was a very important thing that we realized. To be honest, when the community first formed, it definitely was more content-based and discussion-based and really learn something from this site. And we noticed very quickly two very important things. The first is churn's a bitch when you make that your model. And two, it didn't really create any sort of value for the majority of people. Again, it was one of those things. We had a ton of people who have quit. And when I got on the phone with them to ask them why they quit, it was that they were told they could go into the forums and get all the information they needed about XYZ. And they just didn't really get the answers that they were looking for. In which case I said, you know, really sorry to see you go, but if that's what you were looking for, we're not the place for you. Because what we wanted to do was we wanted to build, as you said, this community. We really wanted to have a place that people felt they could belong. You know, the mission statement, vision statement, whatever you want to call it, of that particular business was solving entrepreneurial loneliness. It wasn't how to build your business online. It wasn't any of that kind of stuff. It was helping people who are feeling lonely as location independent entrepreneurs feel a little bit less lonely. So basically, knowing that that was the vision that the guys had created when they first set out to build the community, I made sure to very strategically plan our events and the things that we did and the changes in the form and everything else to make sure that everything we were doing was aligned with doing anything that we could to solve entrepreneurial loneliness.
I think that's a great answer. It actually answered some of the questions I was going to ask you before I even got to ask you.
I'm a very forward-thinking person, Tom. I'm sorry.
No, that's actually great. So tell everyone, where can they find you? What are you working on?
Well, if anyone is looking for me personally, because I'm super fun, you can find me at alyssadoucette.com. It's Alyssa, E-L-I-S-A, Doucette, D-O-U-C-E-T-T-E.com. And if you're looking for what I do in business, you can find that right on my business site, writingbusinesswell.com.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please help out by leaving a review on iTunes and don't forget to hit the subscribe button. If you have any questions, hit me up in the comments on smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebelt. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.